From the four corners of Southern California, this is The Hot Seat, and you're in it with me, Max Schwartz. It starts right now. Today, on the phone, I have Pennsylvania State Lead for Protect Your Care, Julia Cusick. How are you, Ms. Cusick? Thank you very much for calling in from across the country on a week that has been very busy for everybody.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. And this week has been an important week for healthcare, for those that don't know, because the exchange is open, initiating the next phase of the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. And the exchanges allow people to buy affordable health insurance. And the federal government is running 34 exchanges for states that didn't want to pick it up. And ours here is Covered California, which is on the web at www.coveredca.com. I apologize for giving the wrong URL on Political Talk yesterday. People are already seeing the benefits of Obamacare, and people will see more benefits in 88 days on January 1st, 2014. We'll talk about all of that in a moment. Before we get started, I want to just tell our listeners that because of what's happened this week, I am dedicating the entire episode to demythifying, quote-unquote, Obamacare, which is why Ms. Cusick is joining me in the hot seat today. So now we have a heavy show, so without further ado, let's get started. Now, First, for those listening and who do not know, what is Protect Your Care and what does the organization do?
So Protect Your Care is an advocacy organization that champions the Affordable Care Act, and it also holds accountable those lawmakers that are trying to repeal it.
So was this organization in place before the Affordable Care Act?
No. I'm actually not terribly sure of the history, but it's sort of been... It's been active off and on over the last several years.
Okay, so Pennsylvania is, as it's been described, is liberal on both sides, but like Alabama in the center, mm-hmm. where it's all country. What is it like to do your job in a state of that nature?
Well, I actually grew up in the Alabama part of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So it's what I know. And it's, you know, I love Pennsylvania. It's a great state. Philly and Pittsburgh are great cities, and there's a lot of beautiful countryside in the middle. And I really think people are people all over Pennsylvania and all over the country. You don't have health insurance. It doesn't matter if you live in the middle of Philadelphia or on a farm in central PA.
That's a very good point, and I will point out that Pennsylvania in that nature is sort of similar to California, given that we have San Francisco and Los Angeles, north and south, and San Diego south of us. But mm-hmm. in the middle is the Central Valley and Bakersfield, where Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy is from. But that's a whole different conversation entirely. So what troubles are you and your colleagues having in terms of making people aware and encouraging people to sign up for the Affordable Care Act?
Well, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about the Affordable Care Act. Jimmy Kimmel did a pretty funny bit earlier this week on a show about, people comparing Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. Obamacare is a nickname for the Affordable Care Act. Basically, my job is to just make sure people know to go get on healthcare.gov and start shopping for health insurance and signing up for Affordable Care.
Okay, and are the numbers so far looking pretty good for Pennsylvania? I know that they are here in California.
The Department of Health and Human Service hasn't released numbers for Pennsylvania, but there's been a ton of interest on the website, and I was with folks in Philadelphia on Tuesday, the day it opened, and one of the health centers providing assistance to people, and they said their phone started ringing at 2 a.m., so
wow.
I think that's a pretty good indicator.
Now, for those to clarify, is Pennsylvania one of the 34 states where the federal government is running the exchanges?
The federal government is running this exchange in Pennsylvania.
Okay, and you bring up a good point about the differences between Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, and as I mentioned, this is about demythifying Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And CNBC conducted a poll regarding the Affordable Care Act where they asked 406 people who answered their third quarter All-American survey, quote, if they support Obamacare, end quote, and asked the remaining 406, quote, if they support the Affordable Care Act, end quote. 29% are for the Obamacare, while 22% are for the Affordable Care Act, and they're the same law. 46% are against Obamacare, while 37% are against the Affordable Care Act. Now, to me, this is just purely my opinion. This gives a clear indication of who is against Obamacare and why. And now, before we get into the demystifying part of the episode, I just want to say that we're going to give the facts, or what are believed to be the facts at this point in time, and it's up to you whether you want to believe them. And I have reached out to the Heritage Foundation to get the other side of the issue here and their perspective on what's going on in Washington right now, and I haven't heard back yet, but I will keep you posted on that. So now let's get into the thick of things. And would you mind explaining, for people that don't know, how to go about using an exchange?
Yes. So you can go, in any state can go to healthcare.gov, and it will redirect you. In California, it's coveredca.com, I believe.
Yes.
And you basically just create a personal profile, and then after creating your profile, you know, with your basic information, name, address, things like that, you will be directed to a marketplace where you can shop for different health insurance plans. It's similar to shopping for, you know, something on Amazon or eBay. Everything's explained in very simple language, and you can do side-by-side comparisons between different plans and figure out what works best for you and your family.
Yes, and as the president said, he used the analogy of buying a flight on Kayak. And I will say, I personally believe it's a good problem that these states have had, and the federal government has had, clogs with the website, because that means there are too many people looking into it.
Yes. I think Secretary Sebelius made the analogy that it's like rolling out a new version of the iPhone. You know, there might be a few glitches the first day, but they're rolling out a really great product.
But Ezra Klein, today in the Washington Post columnist, made an interesting comment about going off of that, I guess, between Obamacare and an iPhone. But again, that's for a different conversation. So the first umbrella myth is cost and government involvement. So how much is the Affordable Care Act costing the American people, both at the federal and state levels?
Well, the Affordable Care Act was designed to help people get access to health care. People don't have it. But it actually reduces the deficit by making healthcare costs less across the system. So it's ironic. Republicans aren't just trying to take away people's healthcare benefits. They're also trying to raise the deficit. And that comes from the Congressional Budget Office. They've confirmed that repealing Obamacare will raise the deficit.
Yes, because if it's repealed, then Medicaid and Medicare will be paying for people's hospital bills, and which all comes out of the taxpayer's tab. But at the present time, do we have a cost on the average taxpayer?
I don't have any information like that, but we are reducing the deficit, so we are, you know, saving taxpayers' money.
Yes, and that's the big goal. And what sort of costs, well, I guess we've already discussed that, but moving on, for those that do not know, how much government involvement is there in the Affordable Care Act? And we've already established that the government's running the healthcare exchanges, but I believe that's about it.
Yeah, so they are running the exchanges. They're making sure that people are getting covered. And they're also making sure that people can't be discriminated against for pre-existing conditions, which is something that has been going on prior to the Affordable Care Act, which means that people with the most serious health problems weren't able to get health coverage. You know, they're also making sure that insurance companies aren't spending people's premium dollars on things like advertising and fancy offices, that they have to spend 80% of your premium dollar on your care.
Yes, and that's a very good explanation. Thank you for that. And because there is no government involvement there, and we don't have a single-payer plan, is there reason for people to be worried that our hospitals were turned into hospitals such as those in the United Kingdom and our friends across the pond?
No, I think, you know, your hospital experience, as unpleasant as most hospital experiences are, should remain fairly similar. There are some rules, you know, there are going to be, for instance, if you are in Medicare, you should be getting better sort of post-hospital treatments to keep you out of the hospital, so that might be a change, but no, people will still be getting good care here.
And there is a fine for readmissions for the same issue, which we'll get into a little bit
mm-hmm.
later, but people need to understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is a conservative plan because insurance companies are being forced to get the new business.
The insurance companies are being forced to get the new business. Yeah, well, no, insurance companies had the option of offering plan to the marketplace. So I think a lot of insurance companies, including, you know, big name insurance companies like Blue Shield or Blue Cross Blue Shield, were, mm-hmm. you know, excited to get more business. So they offered competitive rates to the marketplace.
Well, that's my point, it meaning that the people have to buy insurance through one of the major insurance companies, therefore benefiting big business as well.
Yeah, so yeah, the insurance companies are getting more customers through mm-hmm. through under the ACA.
And the point of the mandate, and this has been this question has been up in the air and people have disagreed with this, the point of the mandate, which President Obama had to include in the bill, is to offset the cost that will occur, the insurance companies will have once all the sick people get on the plans.
All the sick people.
Well,
yeah, no,
putting
I
it simply.
People with pre-existing conditions.
Yes.
No, so yeah, the individual mandate means that, you know, younger, healthier people will be buying insurance. Who may, you know, have thought, playing the Russian roulette by not signing up before. So more of those folks will be signing up as well. But it's good. You know, I'm fairly young myself, and I've suddenly gone from being perfectly healthy to hospitalized within a 3-day span. So, you know, as a 26-year-old, so, you know, young people need insurance too.
Yes, I'm sorry to hear that. But putting it simply then...
Okay, I recovered, so...
Oh, that's good. Putting it simply, this mandate is absolutely necessary for this plan to work.
Yeah.
Okay. And one, now moving to the hospital readmission fine I was talking about before, would you mind explaining what that is for the people that don't know? Because this is something I only recently learned about.
Yes. So patients who are on Medicare, and that means people over age 65, they found that there was a pretty high rate at which, once they were hospitalized, they would be readmitted to the hospital within 30 days. And actually, the cost, the way Medicare was paying for their hospitalization, hospitals were being almost incentivized to readmit because they were getting paid for each stay. So they, now, if you're a Medicare patient and you are readmitted within 30 days, or hospitals that have a lot of Medicare patients with a high readmittance rate within 30 days, they are going to be penalized for that.
And will the government know that, or will Health and Human Services know that based on the Medicare bills?
Yeah, they monitor this.
So that's another form of government involvement, but one could argue it's a good form of
involvement. Yeah, they have been monitoring this, and Medicare is, you know, isn't a new program. So, but I mean, it's good because people are getting better care as they're leaving the hospital.
And I hear this is already working in many places, especially in here in California, where hospitals are actually, the readmission rate for the same issue due to poor care is declining.
Yes.
So will there be a difference in care once you're in the hospital, if you're in the hospital, between patients that have insurance versus patients that have Medicare, or is it going to be the same as it is now?
Well, there are different levels. I mean, the great thing about the marketplace is it is the free market. So there, Medicare is one program for people over 65. And then if you are purchasing insurance on the marketplace, everybody can purchase a different plan. So the plans, you know, are all high quality plans, but there might be different deductibles based on what level you choose to cover yourself with.
But the quality of the care itself is the same amongst all patients as it should be now.
Yeah, they won't discriminate based on. I mean, the hospitals won't know if you buy a Blue Cross Blue Shield plan on the marketplace, you're insured by Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way for hospitals to tell whether you bought that on the marketplace, for instance, instead of buying it, getting it from an employer or something like that.
No, I don't believe there is.
Okay, and going back to what we were sort of talking about earlier, our hospitals are essentially going to stay the same they are. They're not because there's no socialized medicine here. It's not turning into anything else. The hospitals are staying the same for those that don't know.
Yes. One difference, though, that people can expect come January 1st is right now there are a lot of uninsured folks who basically use the emergency room mm-hmm. for their primary care because
that's what they can afford.
That's what they can afford, and the emergency rooms legally can't turn them away. So we are expecting that you know, people will start going to the doctors and, you know, their primary care physicians when they have, you know, problems like flu or pneumonia or things like that. And also they will be getting better preventative services, so hopefully less folks will be showing up with things like heart attacks.
And that also means that the emergency rooms won't be as crowded with people who
yes.
don't have an emergency.
Yes, exactly.
And you bring up the fact that more people will be going to doctors, and people have this misconception that it will now be impossible to go see doctors, as some would say it is in Europe. Now, to me, the reason that that myth is out there is because of Europe, but the real reason why any people would have difficulty getting to a doctor here is because now more people have insurance, which means more can go to the doctor.
Yes, yeah, so that rumor has been out there. Quite frankly, these, you know, doctor's offices and have been about almost 4 years to prepare for this, for having more patients. And I was actually reading an article today about Los Angeles, and they've interviewed hospitals all over Los Angeles, and, you know, folks seem to be, the hospitals all said they're prepared, they're ready for people to come in.
Okay, and to put it again, for those that don't know, the Affordable Care Act is not supposed to make it harder to go see your doctor, and you won't have any problems getting in, or you're not supposed to.
No, and it will make it actually cheaper to go to your doctor because it will get rid of a lot of copays for preventative service, things like blood pressure checks, diabetes checks. So it should make it a better and less expensive experience.
Okay, that's very good to know. And there's also the myth out there, and then staying with the demythified theme throughout the episode, is that doctors are dropping insurance coverage. Have you seen this to be a phenomena?
No.
Okay. Is there any statistics out there as to how many doctors are expected to drop insurance or anything like that?
None that I've seen.
Okay. But and so to reiterate, in Pennsylvania right now, you haven't seen any people who haven't been able to go to the doctor because the doctors are no longer taking insurance?
No. There are folks who can't go to the doctor now because they don't have insurance, but that will change on January 1st. I've talked to a lot of those people, actually.
Okay. And now moving again into the health insurance costs. Some people say that there has not been a change in price or cost yet. But what I recently saw a graph and a news report that said healthcare costs have risen slowly more recently than they have in recent memory. Is that true?
Yes, especially over the last 3 years. The health spending has grown by about 3.9% a year,
mm-hmm.
And that's a historic low.
Low for increase. Prices are still going
low
up.
Low for increase, yes.
Yeah. And this question was raised to me the other day, do we know if this is because more people are laid off?
That is part of it, that people are spending less because of the economic situation in the country.
Okay, so as of January 1st, 2014, are we expected to see that number decrease even more because care will now be affordable, or even go down?
What I've seen, and these are just projections, is it's supposed to stay along a somewhat similar trend. But yeah, people's out-of-pocket costs will be lower, their copays will be lower, or in some cases for some services be non-existent.
Okay. And how much does an individual plan on the exchanges cost the average American?
Well, that depends on a number of factors. It depends on your age. Younger people are paying less because they tend to need less care. It depends on where you live, the cost of living in your area. It also depends on what plan you choose. There are four levels of plans, bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And if you choose a bronze plan, you'll be paying lower premiums every month, but you will have higher out-of-pocket costs. So really, you know, we're just encouraging folks to go in the marketplace, you know, shop around, you know, think about, you know, if you're planning on, you know, going to the doctor a lot, you might want to get gold or platinum plan. If you don't think you'll use the insurance quite as much, you might want to get a bronze plan.
And again, to make this clear to all of our listeners, because these people, our listeners, are from all over, this applies universally across the country, the plans.
Yes, the four tiers are universal across the country. But how much you pay for each level of care really depends on where you live.
Yes.
And your age.
And another thing that differs from where you live to where you live is certain insurance companies are in certain markets, meaning states, but not other places. But that can all be looked into by going to healthcare.gov. And the other big, not issue, but big question and a big part of this is the tax credits that people receive for signing up, that people receive to help subsidize their cost of healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets tax credits? How is this determined? And how much do those people receive?
Well, actually, a lot of folks get tax credits.
Okay.
That's one of the great parts about the Affordable Care Act. If you make between 100% and 400% of the federal poverty level, you are eligible for tax credits to help you make your health care more affordable, no matter what level of plan you choose or where you live or how old you are. So the federal poverty level for a family of four, mm-hmm. is the 400% of the federal poverty level for a family of four is $94,200 a year, which I think is a fairly substantial middle-class salary. If you're an individual, it's about $11,000 a year to $44,000 a year. So if you're just sort of a young 20-something starting out in life, a lot of those folks will qualify for tax subsidies.
And do we know how much they will receive?
You know, you have to go shop on healthcare.gov.
So it's not one set tax credit for individual groups. It all varies depending on situation.
It depends, yeah, it depends.
Okay, and again, the goal of that is to make healthcare more affordable.
Make healthcare affordable, yeah. So I actually have a friend in California. He has a family of three. They're, I think, 31, 32, and then they have a baby. And they figured out that they'll be paying about $145 a month for a bronze plan. I'm not exactly sure what their income is, but, I mean, that's
still
very
incredibly cheap
for a family.
Absolutely. And I will say that for those out there on the right side of the aisle that don't like tax credits, there are tax credits for many things, and this just is one of them. And the goal of these tax credits is to make something else more affordable, not to subsidize something unhealthy or anything of that nature. And it's not to business, it's to people.
To people, yes.
And returning, and now I'd like to turn, to the myth of jobs. So how much more will employers have to pay in benefits costs? Do we know that amount?
I don't have that figure for you right now, but the idea is also to make part of the Affordable Care Act is making healthcare more affordable for employers to provide to their employees.
And here in California, we have Trader Joe's, one of the grocery stores out here based in California and a few states, that they have determined it is cheaper to move people onto exchanges than to keep some workers on. Have you noticed anything in Pennsylvania where companies have to stop issuing health insurance because it would be cheaper for those employees to buy something on the exchange than to pay for it from the employer?
I don't have any Pennsylvania-specific examples of that. I mean, I've heard the Trader Joe's story. Really, I think in general, these stories are sort of overblown and sort of being played up by conservatives. For the most part, health insurance will be cheaper for employers to provide to their employees.
And out here in Southern California, we've heard stories of companies decreasing hours, coincidentally to 29 and a half hours, which is half an hour below the time in which you're considered full-time when you have to provide employees benefits. Is there any indication that that will continue as a negative consequence of the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, so that's another story. Yes, I think there's a subway in Maine that's doing that, that keeps getting bandied around a lot. And there may be a few other examples.
Forever 21, a big clothing store.
Forever 21. Okay, so that is, you know, also been overblown. You know, in a recession, there tends to be more part-time workers. So, mm-hmm. yeah, so that's, so I think a lot of the statistics you see around that are, come from the fact that we are in a recession. But yeah, there doesn't seem to be any widespread mass of people, you know, massive employers moving all their employees to 29.5 hours a week.
Okay.
In central Pennsylvania, we have a restaurant called, you know, in the middle of Amish country that they interviewed in the Lancaster, Pennsylvania paper, and asking them if they were going to do this. And this is the most conservative part of the state. And they're like, you know, they're not going to do that. So.
Okay, so out here, we hear about that type of story a lot, where businesses are going to be decreasing people to part-time employees or adjusting part-time employees to 29.5, the new definition of part-time. If I'm getting this right, those stories are few and far between and not as much as we hear about them.
Yeah, they are being overplayed, yeah. Like, there are anecdotal, like, there is, you know, some anecdotes that get bandied around a lot, but as a widespread trend, we don't see that happening.
Okay, and does Protect Your Care or the U.S. government, as far as your knowledge, do they have any idea as to whether this will create more, or in terms of work, will it allow for more full-time workers to be hired, or do you believe, does Protect Your Care believe that this will only lead to more part-time jobs?
The health care, the Affordable Care Act?
Yes.
Well, yeah, there will be some more healthcare workers hired to provide services, so that will help. The Affordable Care Act is helping the health sector. There's also been a number of jobs created for people who are called navigators, who are helping consumers navigate through the health insurance marketplace. So those are some jobs being created. So the Affordable Care Act actually is creating jobs.
But in terms of outside the healthcare sector, what I'm asking is, employers may be now more inclined to hire part-time workers so they don't have to supply health insurance for them in 2015, when the small business part of the law, where 50 employees, with a business with 50 employees or more that have full-time status, they are required to give them healthcare. Are we going to see more businesses hire only part-time workers to get around that part of the law?
No, not to my knowledge.
Okay. And, all right, then that's good. And one more question before we end here is, what parts of the law have already gone into effect for those that don't know? Because we have some parts that are starting in 2015, which I'll talk about in a moment. We have some starting in 2014, 88 days from now. And we've already have some things that have already gone into effect.
Yeah, so we already have, you know, a lot of folks benefiting under the Affordable Care Act. One of the people is my sister. She is 25, and she's able to stay on my parents' health insurance plan because her employer doesn't provide health insurance. So she would not be getting health care if it weren't for the Affordable Care Act. Another benefit that we're already enjoying is, I referenced this earlier, but the 80-20 rule, which says that for every dollar of premium that you pay, insurance companies have to spend 80% of it on your care.
Mm-hmm. And if they're not, they're fined.
Yep. And, or they, well, they have to return the money to you.
Yes, return the rebate.
Yeah. And then also, you know, there's already rules in effect about how health insurance must cover preventative service for women. There's a lot of services that pregnant women are receiving by law under health. Their insurance companies have to cover that they were before, and some sort of STD checks, things like that. We're already seeing benefits. The big changes for 2014, of course, insurance you buy over the marketplace will start going into effect. Another huge one is pre-existing conditions. used to be that if you had a serious illness like diabetes, you know, lupus, cancer, you basically couldn't purchase insurance, or, you know, the fees were just astronomical. So mm-hmm. a lot of the sickest people are going without. Now you can't be denied coverage because you get sick. So that's just so huge for so many people. Also, there will be no more limits on yearly coverage. So you can get, you know, if you get very, very sick, the insurance companies can't cut you off after a certain point. So health insurance will be really doing what it's intended to do, which is provide a safety net for you. Mm-hmm. And
they can't drop you either after 24.
They can't drop you, yeah. So, and then also there'll be more savings on premiums and out-of-pocket costs. I mentioned, you know, no co-pays for a lot of preventative services. So, you know, maybe only $20 here or there, but in the course of the year, that really does add up. So that should be helping folks a lot. But, 2014 is going to be a big year. And, you know, I talk to people every day. I was in Philly earlier this week talking to a woman who has no health insurance and has asthma and a serious heart condition. She's 37. And every month she picks and chooses which medication she can buy because she can't afford them all. So she tries to buy the most important one, which costs her $108 a month, and she's pretty low income. That's tough, and she foregoes the other. So under the Affordable Care Act, she will, you know, finally start getting the health care she needs to keep her healthy.
And that's one of the great benefits of the Affordable Care Act. And considering having health insurance, you're not really supposed to be, you should be able to get all your medications. But again, that's just a personal opinion. And as for 2015, earlier we mentioned the small business portion of the law was delayed until then. That is when businesses with 50 or more employees that are full-time must be insured by their employer. Are there any portions of the 2015 law that go into effect in 2015, or is there a way you can clarify what I just said?
So the businesses will have to start businesses of 50 people or more will have to start providing insurance in 2015. So that will help a lot more people.
Okay, and other than that, the rest of the law will be in full gear by that time.
Yeah, so we've been, since 2010 when the law has passed, it's sort of been slowly implemented, but really, you know, being a woman's no longer a pre-existing condition, that's something that affects every family, I think. You know, there are a lot of folks, I think the important thing to remember is there are a lot of folks out there hurting because they don't have or haven't had access to affordable health care, and people are finally going to get the care they need.
Yes, and that's the benefit of the Affordable Care Act, and ultimately this bill is for access to health care more than anything else.
Yes, it's Affordable Care and Patient Protection Act, so it makes it more affordable, and it protects you as a patient, you know, so it's important to remember that.
Well, thank you very much for joining me in the hot seat today, Ms. Cusick.
Thank you.
My pleasure. And I hope to all of my listeners out there that you learned something new about the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and this demythified it for you. And again, we will let you know when we hear something from the Heritage Foundation. I appreciate for you taking the time to call in today, Ms. Cusick. And the hot seat after hours starts right now. You can email me at thehotseatwithmaxschwartz@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at maxschwartztv. You can also read and follow my blog at maxschwartztv.blogspot.com. The links for all of those will be on annenbergradio.org. Max Schwartz TV is the official blog of The Hot Seat, for those that didn't know. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you will join me next time, and have a great weekend.